Today, welcome to Wonderland, the DFA Daily to the 17th of June 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, world's latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The latest act by the US Federal Reserve was its move from buying exchange-traded funds of investment-grade bonds to purchasing individual bonds. The news came as a surprise to the market and EFTs shot higher. The Fed seems to be providing a put under share prices and will intervene in the market to keep them up. Before this, the market was rocky following a difficult end to the previous week. But after the announcement, markets rocketed away. And in fact, there was no need for the Fed to do this. Corporate bond markets were sitting on yields of below 4%, a level which was unthinkable until the past year. And bond issuance has gone through the roof in the last few months. The bond market was actually operating just fine. So why the corporate bailout? I'm minded of the ECB under Mario Draghi, who promised at the worst of the Eurozone sovereign debt crisis to do whatever it takes to save the euro. And the then president of the European Central Bank was never called on to follow through, as the market never tested their resolve. And his words proved enough to tide the Eurozone through. The Fed should have and could have adopted the same strategy. But no, they waded in. Now, this may simply reflect a sense of obligation to follow through on earlier announcements, but that isn't how central bankers tend to run their relationships with the markets. Or perhaps we can get some clues from Powell's recent outings. He said the Fed might consider targeting the yield curve like the Bank of Japan. Such a strategy would ensure ultra-low interest rates for longer, which in turn, by the way, supports gold. And he signaled also that interest rates will remain low for at least until the unemployment rate normalizes. This means that even if inflation goes up, the Fed will not rush to tighten monetary policy if the unemployment rate is above the historical average range. Given that inflation has recently declined, the Fed's dovish bias is almost certain. And what is important here is that Powell expects significant slack in the labour market. In other words, the coronavirus crisis will lead to permanent job losses. Yeah, she said, my assumption is that there will be a significant chunk, well, into the millions. I don't want to give you an exact number because it's going to be a guess, but well, into the millions of people who don't get to go back to their old job. And in fact, there may not be a job in that industry for them for some time. Eventually there will be, but it could be some years before we get back to those people finding jobs. And third, Powell is worried about a second wave of coronavirus. He believes it might be another factor behind the gradual recovery, which might not necessarily be V-shaped. And again, he said, I think that if it happens, you know, the issue would be, first of all, people's health, but secondly, you could see a public loss of confidence in parts of the economy, which will be already slow to recover. So it could hurt the recovery, even if you don't have a national level pandemic, just a series of local ones, of local spikes that could have the effect of undermining people's confidence in travelling, in restaurants and entertainment, anything that involves getting people together in small groups and feeding them or flying them around. Those things could be hurt. So it would not be a positive development, and I'll just leave it at that. And Powell might be right. The number of US daily cases is still rising. Now, overnight on Tuesday, Wall Street was higher, with the Dow up 2.04%, while the S&P 500 gained 1.9%, and the Nasdaq was 1.75% higher. Hopes for recovery had been bolstered by data showing US retail sales jumped by a record 17.7% in May, from a low base, of course, recovering more than half of the losses of the previous 2 months, though industrial output still lagged. The Trump administration was also reportedly preparing around $1 trillion of infrastructure investments, something which was initially promised more than 3 years ago. There is little doubt The global economy bottomed in April and is poised to post record high growth rates over May and June, strongly lifting third quarter GDP above its second quarter trough, wrote economists at JP Morgan. But questions about the extent of lasting damage will have to wait for a number of months before being resolved. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell cautioned that output and employment would remain well short of their pre-pandemic levels for a long time, so there was a reasonable probability that more policy support would be needed. And sentiment got an added boost from news that trial results showed a cheap and widely used steroid could reduce death rates among the most severely ill COVID-19 patients. Let the virus continue to spread as infections hit record highs in six US states, and Beijing struggled to contain a fresh outbreak in the Chinese capital. And all the talk of recovery took some of the shine off sovereign bonds, with the US 30-year yields up to 1.53%, having risen by the most in a month on Tuesday. That in turn helped the US dollar bounce modestly from recent three-month lows to stand at 97.063 against a basket of currencies. But as the AFR reported, you still cannot fight the Fed. A new survey suggests professional investors have followed retail investors into the market, but remain deeply and justifiably skeptical about valuations and fundamentals. Fund managers have been forced to shake off their deep skepticism about the true state of the global economy and buy into the incredible rallies that have sent Wall Street soaring 40% since late March and sent the ASX up 30%. Bank of America Merrill Lynch survey of 212 mainly US fund managers with $867 billion US dollars under management found cash levels in June fell from 5.7% to 4.7%, which was the biggest monthly decline since August 2009, when institutions started to put money to work at the back end of the GFC. At the same time, net equity exposure inside hedge funds leapt from 34% to 52%, the highest level since September 2018. So this data suggests professional investors have been left with little choice but to try to follow the army of retail investors, including the slightly frazzled newbies who've stormed the US market and to a lesser extent the Australian one, in surfing the momentum created by the gradual reopening of economies and the tide of liquidity created by the Federal Reserve and other central banks. But while fund managers might be increasingly buying into this rally, it appears there's a long way to go before they believe in it. The survey shows 53% of managers believe this is a bear market rally, with 37% describing it as a new bull market. There is a vast disconnect between actions and beliefs. Only 18% of those surveys believe the US economy will see a V-shaped recovery, despite what you might read into the messages from Wall Street's rallies. And a net 78% of investors, a record in the survey, believe the market is overvalued. The apparent disconnect between investors' actions and their concerns about the market isn't all that surprising. After all, it's a numbers game, and there would be a few professional investors who could afford to tell their clients that they didn't get at least a piece of the fastest rally in generations. And perhaps fund managers are now reading the nuances in a reasonably logical way. Some cautious optimism is warranted. The reopening of economies around the world has seen a pleasing bounce in activity towards pre-COVID levels. And while there will be lingering concerns about new outbreaks of infection, like we're seeing in Beijing and in some American states, these mini outbreaks will likely continue for many months and may not mean a return to large-scale lockdowns, or it may. We'll have to wait and see. On top of that, governments and central banks appear prepared to do as much as they can, or perhaps given what we've seen from the Fed's move to buy corporate bonds in recent days, whatever it takes to help businesses and households through a recovery that will be inherently sluggish because of social distancing. But fund managers are right to retain a high degree of skepticism and to position to protect clients from some of the downside risks that clearly remain as we emerge from this health crisis. So they describe the mood of investors as fragile, neurotic, nowhere near dangerously bullish, which feels about right. and it could be months and perhaps even years before we have a good idea of how the economy will perform when governments wind back economic stimulus and what that means for company earnings. It's easy to ignore that when central banks are flooding the system with liquidity, but one day earnings will matter again. And it'll be fascinating to watch how fund managers position from here. Veteran Bell Potter broker Richard Cobbleson has been quick to point out the US market doesn't historically retest lows after a rally of this magnitude, and with the Fed seemingly determined to ensure punters feel as little pain as possible, professional investors will probably struggle to stay out of the market, even if their instincts are telling them to do so. And locally today, Asian market shares took a breather as a resurgence of coronavirus cases challenged market confidence in a rapid economic recovery, even as the rebound in US retail sales in May broke all records. Geopolitics also lurked as a worry, with India reporting 20 of its soldiers having been killed in clashes with Chinese troops at a disputed border site, and North Korea rejected a South Korea offer to send special envoys and vowed to send back troops to the border. It was enough to inject a note of caution into trading, and Japan's Nikkei eased 0.7% after jumping almost 5% on Tuesday for its biggest daily gain in 3 months. The MSCI's broadest index of Asia-Pacific shares outside Japan went flat, having climbed 2.8% the previous day, with most markets across the region little changed. In commodity markets, gold was around $1,725 US and well within its recent range. Oil prices were pulled back by an increase in US crude inventories, having climbed 3% on Tuesday after the International Energy Agency raised its oil demand forecast for 2020. US crude lost 72 cents to 38.38, and the ASX closed up 0.83% to 5,991, and the Aussie was at 69.02, with Westpac now calling 72 cents by the end of 2020 and 76 cents by the end of 2021. Risk sentiment through to year's end will be volatile, but generally supportive, they say. Next year, global growth will lift. But the local news is not so positive, as we see a rotation of unemployment of low-paid workers in retail and hospitality to more upmarket jobs. For example, the AFR reported that PwC will cut 400 roles in its consulting and financial advisory business, as well as its support function, after the pandemic cut demand for the big four firms' services. Staff were told about the cuts, which work out to about 5% of the firm's 8,000-strong workforce, at a firm-wide meeting which began at 3 p.m. on Wednesday. The move will involve partner retirements and staff redundancies, but the firm did not specify the breakdown between the groups. The move to cut staff comes 2 weeks ahead of the end of the firm's reduced working week program, which has seen the pay and hours of underutilized staff cut by at least 20% since the middle of April, a 4% annualized reduction. At the time, staff were told the move was designed to protect jobs and not make people redundant. Staff on the reduced working week will receive redundancy entitlements based on their regular full-time pay. PwC wants to have the restructure and redundancies completed by the end of July. We want to ensure our business is strong, is set to grow successfully and sustainably, and is focused on our clients and their needs, PwC CEO Tom Seymour told the Australian Financial Review. Equally, these are difficult decisions, and we are saddened that making structural changes in some of our businesses will cause some difficult impacts. We do not underestimate the impact this will have on our people, and we will work through this process as thoroughly and quickly as possible to bring our people certainty, Mr. Seymour told the Financial Review. At the start of the month, the revenue and the firm had fallen by more than 15% in April and May, with only compliance and audit work pretty much on track. At the time, he also noted the firm had projected annual revenue growth would be between 0 and minus 20% as clients deferred or cancelled projects. The move to cut staff in consulting comes less than a month after new leader David Mickering restructured the division into industry groupings instead of by function. PwC partners have been told that revenue in consulting is down by 15%. Strategy and a division of consulting is down by 47%. And management consulting is down by 15%. And the support functions of the firm include internal roles such as those in human resources, recruitment and finance. And finally, a bit more Alice from APRA. They updated their FAQs to provide authorised deposit-taking institutions, or ADIs, with updated guidance on supervisors' expectations during the period of disruption driven by COVID-19. I want to take you through them and ask you to spot the problem. They say many banks are offering small businesses and other borrowers the option to defer their repayment for a specific period. To support this, APRA has provided a regulatory capital approach for these loans. This sets out that over the next 6 months, banks do not need to treat the period of the repayment deferral as a period of arrears for capital purposes. This regulatory capital approach can be applied to a broad class of otherwise performing loans on which ADIs grant repayment deferrals. This includes loans that are less than 90 days past due and not impaired at the time deferral was granted. For small business loans, the regulatory capital approach applies where ADIs offer a repayment deferral of up to 6 months. Small business loans are defined for this purpose as total loan facilities up to $10 million. For other credit facilities, the regulatory capital approach applies for an initial deferral period of 3 months, which may be extended for another 3 months if considered appropriate. With the exception of small business loans, ADIs should conduct a check at the end of the initial three-month deferral period. The check should determine whether there is any objective evidence that it is no longer appropriate to maintain the regulatory capital approach, given, for example, more permanent changes in the borrower's financial circumstances. ADIs should not be avoiding recognition of losses where inevitable. This check, they say, is not expected to involve a full credit risk assessment, but nor should it be an automatic decision to extend the regulatory capital approach. ADIs can use information gathered through proprietary sources, credit reporting agencies, and inquiries with borrowers where necessary to inform the check. There should also be a record of evidence of the check. ADIs should publicly disclose the nature and terms of any repayment deferrals given to a broad class of loans and the volume of loans to which they are applied. An ADI should also closely monitor the portfolio credit risk of this cohort of loans and are required to report to APRA information on the volume and risk profile of this segment of the portfolio. And then they went on to say, as outlined in Prudential Practice Guide APG 223, Residential Mortgage Lending, APRA's guidance on better practice in residential mortgage lending has been that there should be a full serviceability assessment for borrowers where there is a material change in loan conditions. In the current environment, APRA acknowledges that there may be operational challenges for ADIs in evaluating the long-term impact of economic stress on borrowers due to COVID-19. However, they say, this should not prevent changes to loan conditions where these are otherwise assessed to be prudent. Over the next 6 months period, APRA therefore accepts that some ADIs may not be able to complete a full serviceability assessment for borrowers seeking a change in their loan conditions, such as including converting from principal and interest to interest only, or for the extension of a loan term. Where changes to loan conditions are made that result in an interest-only period being granted without a normal serviceability assessment, APRA expects that a reasonable period for such an arrangement would not exceed 12 months. ASIC has confirmed that responsible lending obligations apply to new lending or increases to contractual credit limits for existing lending and should not be considered by lenders as a barrier to making other appropriate changes to the terms of existing loans in response to hardship situations. Appropriately assessing a borrower's ability to service and repay a loan continues to be an important component of new residential mortgage lending. And APRA notes ASIC's clarifications on the range of circumstances that lenders can consider when assessing a borrower's credit and likely future capacity to meet repayment obligations. This is consistent with APG 223, which states that as part of its serviceability assessment, an ADR would typically assess and verify a borrower's income and expenses having regard to the particular circumstances of the borrower. An inherent part of the APS 16 market risk framework is that where there is an increased risk, there is an increased capital requirement. Increased volatility experienced during March and April 2020 is consequently and appropriately expected to result in increased market capital risk. One aspect of the risk market internal model capital framework relates to model reliability being confirmed through back testing of model results to actual outcomes. Where model reliability falls, capital requirements are appropriately adjusted. Through mid-March to mid-April 2020, internal modelling banks are likely to have experienced an unusually high number of VAR backtesting exceptions. And APRA's view is that many of the exceptions experienced during that period are not evidence of deficiencies in an ADI's model. Accordingly, APRA will allow modelling ADIs to disregard backtesting exceptions that occurred in the month of March and April 2020 in determining a plus factor for an ADI and disregard those exceptions in determining whether to apply a plus factor of 1 under paragraph 86 of APS 16. APRA believes this measure will prevent capital requirements from increasing in a way that is not consistent with the intent of the prudential standard. Modelling ADIs must still include exceptions from March and April 2020 in the number that is compared to a threshold of 10 exceptions to determine whether to submit an analysis of exceptions to APRA. And ADIs are currently required to revalue property used as security for residential mortgage exposures for the purposes of measuring regulatory capital when they become aware of material change in the value of property in an area or region. This is a requirement in Prudential Standard APS 112, Capital Adequacy, Standardized Approach to Credit Risk. APRA has previously proposed to remove this requirement as part of broader revisions to the Prudential Standards on Regulatory Capital. This was foreshadowed, they say, in APRA's consultation on revisions to the ADI Capital Framework in June 2019. The rationale for this change in part recognised that the calibration of the residential mortgage risk weights in APS 112 already includes an allowance for increases in the risk of residential mortgage exposures, including from house price movements. Additional movements in risk weights from the revaluation of residential mortgage properties has the potential, they say, to be excessively pro-cyclical in amplifying ADI capital requirements. Given these considerations and the intention to remove the revaluation requirement, APRA is clarifying that ADIs will not be expected to revalue residential mortgage properties for the purpose of meeting APS 112. This applies with immediate effect. ADIs, however, may consider it appropriate to continue to conduct revaluations for broader risk management and other purposes. And nothing in this FAQ is intended to discourage ADIs from doing so where they consider it prudent. Now, did you spot it? APRA are basically further insulating the banks from any potential property value falls. This is yet another sign of state support for our private banks. Very Fed-like, actually. After all, you must protect the financial system at all costs. So let's change the rules and post-justify the decisions. But then, such as this is just another day in the office in Aliceville. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.